Evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Late Night Interview. I'm your host, Max Asanovic, and this evening, by virtue of all the gadgets that I have sitting in front of me, we'll be going some 6,000 miles away, over to Seattle, for an evening with Billy Corgan and Darcy from the excellent Smashing Pumpkins. Now, obviously, they've just released their newest album, which is the epic 28-track Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness. So undoubtedly they'll be discussing that and hopefully giving us a few more insights into exactly what makes the band tick. So sit back and enjoy our late night interview, as I said, with Billy and Darcy from the Smashing Pumpkins.
An evening with Billy Corgan. My name's Marco Collins, and we're here at our secret undisclosed location. We still can't tell anybody because we don't want crazy crowds outside, but we're sitting in a room full of winners. How you guys doing? We're gonna spend the next hour doing an interview with Billy Corgan and, ladies and gentlemen, Darcy from the Smashing Pumpkins. Hey, Billy. Very special surprise. We didn't expect Darcy to be here with us today. Hey, Darcy.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm not really Darcy. I'm Billy's long-lost cousin, Dora.
Ah. God, you look a lot
Dora
like Darcy.
From Iowa, yeah.
That's why Darcy's in the band.
Thank you guys very much for being a part of this and helping us set this thing up. What do you think of the location here?
Do you mean
the room?
Here?
The room.
Beautiful. It's really
nice.
I think I'm feeding back.
It's just like the concert.
Yeah.
Right on. What we're going to do is we're going to have a bunch of you folks be asking questions of Billy and Darcy, and there's some very excited fans here today. Those are beautiful flowers. Bill is going to walk around the room in a very Jenny Jones fashion and have you guys ask the questions yourselves. So why don't we jump straight into this thing right now?
Why are we here?
You're here to answer questions, aren't you?
Okay.
Oh, I thought we were asking you questions.
Yeah.
Well, you can.
You're welcome to any time. If you have an interview question you'd like to, you could interview us. That's fine. Interview the listeners.
What made you want to go into radio?
You know, I'm still asking myself that. Should we dive in?
Yeah, I suppose we could if people are ready to. Ask questions. We've been talking about this.
There's some very excited fans here tonight. Pumpkin.
Okay, all right. Let's get this guy over with here. What's your name? Who are you?
I'm Murphy Kynes from Soma, and I have really two good questions. Darcy, what does your necklace say?
It says Carrie.
Okay.
That's my real name.
And, like, do you still like the Sacred Heart and stuff?
Nah, you know.
We're over it.
We're over the Sacred
Heart.
Okay, I was heading over here.
Good
Did you
question.
Have a question?
What's your name?
Alexis Gentry.
Hi, Alexis.
Hi. I'm from Stanwood. Hi, Stanwood. And I want...
You're just here to say hi.
I want...
To them, not us.
I want... Oh, my God.
Don't worry. Don't be nervous. It's only going after about a million people.
She's Your mother right now is wondering why she put you through all those years of school, but...
What was your question? We'll get back to her. Don't worry.
Okay, I'm Amy Euchre from Stanwood, and I want to know what you think when you, like, walk through the grocery store and you see, like, your face on a magazine. What do you think?
Usually I think, why was I wearing that? It's a lot of what was I thinking, you know?
Any thoughts there, Darcy?
It's usually like, why did they pick that horrible picture?
Is it something that you have no control over?
It depends on the situation, but usually it's like, well, you can't really show you the photos because we're on a deadline and you guys are on tour and it's a lot of that kind of thing.
What's your name?
It depends on whether or not the magazine likes you. You know?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What magazines in particular would you rather have your photograph in?
I will not allow Darcy to answer
no
that
names.
Question. Thank you.
No names.
What's your name?
Sarah. And I was wondering if it was weird for you to play the American Music Awards.
It was kind of crazy, yeah. I mean, I, you know, it was like Garth Lionel Brooks. Richie, Garth Brooks, and the Smashing Pumpkins.
It was,
you
like,
know, it was like
the Smashing
that
Pumpkins.
Right there, I mean, I don't even have to really say anything. And then, like, and they had these weird, like, very TV show kind of sets, like, you know, because we were the rock band, they kind of had the rock band set, you know. It was like, we could have been anybody, you know, Aerosmith or, you know, something, you know.
Is it one of those situations where it's hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, and
actually,
then wait?
Yeah, but actually, we thought it was going to be kind of weird and creepy, but actually, you know, got to meet Dick Clark, and everybody was really nice, so it was okay. It was just weird to be on that kind of show, because you feel like you're the weird band in amongst the not weird bands, you know?
What is it with Dick Clark still looking exactly the way he did years ago? Did he look like that close up?
Yeah.
He did. He didn't even look like he was wearing any makeup or anything.
That's
wild.
He looks great.
He does?
He looks great.
Wow.
Although he does have oxygen tanks on his back.
Does that answer your question?
Going right in intravenously or what? But
you know what I think it is? I think it's the exercising. He was wearing like a tuxedo, black tie, and tennis shoes.
Wow.
So
what does that sound?
Physically
fit. Oh, no.
That was just Bill. Forgive him.
Excuse me. That must have been the bean
that Mexican
salad.
Dinner you had.
What's your name?
My name is Cassie Meyer, and I was wondering, is it like cool or flattering to be in a room full of people who are totally obsessed with you, or is it scary?
Well, the first question I would ask you is, why? And the second question I would ask is, oh, you have something better to do. And the third question I would ask is, thanks, and what?
That's not a question.
No, I mean, honestly, to be serious for a moment, we've worked at this for so long that you get to a point where you really appreciate people coming to see you and people coming, being interested, because it's been a long road. I mean, this has not happened overnight. So
it'd be worse if we weren't in a room full of people who like
us. Exactly.
Put it that way.
That would
feel a lot worse.
That is cool that you guys have that attitude, though, because a lot of people, I think, when they reach the size the Pumpkins are at this point, kind of have almost a not so much a negative feeling towards their fans, but sort of an anti-publicity, sort of want to be away from
the fan. Well, I mean,
you can't always deal with it. I mean, you can't always deal with being like mobbed or something, but generally we're not. I mean, I always feel like our fans relate to us sort of on a different level as other bands, much more like they feel like they relate to us, and so they're respectful.
Yeah, I got a note from a girl the other day that says, you don't know how hard it is to actually be a Smashing Pumpkins fan, meaning like she gets a lot of crap from other people about it. So
wow.
We certainly feel we have a different affinity with people who like our band, because they definitely can understand where we're coming from. So
we don't get like mobbed very often or anything. People are generally polite and respectful, and, you know.
You never know, though. It could get out of hand.
What's your name?
This is Dave Belcher from Olympia. What's up, Charles and Patty? I was reading some letters.
Another self-serving fan.
I was reading some letters in response to your article in last month's CMJ magazine, which this guy says pretty much to stop whining because you make so much money about your troubled past. And I didn't agree with that letter, but how do you feel?
That's a pretty typical, like, you know, it's like the typical Rush Limbaugh response to what we have to say. I think if anybody's really read the things we said, we've never really whined. We whined about each other, you know, that's a different thing. But we've never whined about the success that we've had. We've never whined about fans. All we've said is, like, we just want people to be as honest as they expect us to be. And we have people come to concerts that don't really care about the Smashing Pumpkins, so why should we pretend otherwise? I mean, I think we owe it to the people that like our music to be absolutely honest and have great integrity. And if that seems like whining sometimes, that's just because people can't bear to hear the truth. The fact of the matter is we're all in, I mean, pretty much everyone I talk to is in basic agreement that alternative music is no longer really alternative, that moshing has ceased to be a spontaneous activity. There's a lot of things about alternative culture that have passed on to the mainstream. So we can call a spade and
move,
you know,
on.
And try to move on and make for better music and better things and try to create better relationships between bands and fans. Or we can continue to the rock tradition of we're different from you are and you're not as cool as we are. And If those, if that's the kind of bands you want to listen to, more power to you. But the bands I wanted to listen to are people that I could relate to, and that's always been our position. And people, a lot of people don't like that. They want their rock stars to be untouchable. And where we come from, where we stand for, it's never been what we're about.
Billy, I remember hearing a quote that you had mentioned about moshing and about how the all it is these days is getting in a pit. You're moshing for the wrong reasons. How do the Pumpkins feel?
Over intellectualizing it, but
okay, all right. You're sick of moshing. You hate moshing.
I mean, we were playing when, you know, in 1990, when people would go nuts because they never heard music like this before.
They were really moved, not like it was the cool thing to do. It's really disgusting to us when we're playing one of our really slow,
Disarm
beautiful
would be a good
songs.
One. Disarm would
Unless
be a good
it's
example.
The heavy metal version.
Moshing, yeah, right. You know, they're like body surfing. It's like they're not even paying attention. They're not.
They've seen it on MTV, and they want to be
That's
out there.
That's
yeah, I mean,
to do.
We should know beat a dead horse, but, I mean, basically, we've just tried to say, hey, you know, if we're rocking you, then, and if you're moved, that's cool. But certainly when you play a slow song and people are doing whatever it is they think they're doing, I mean,
let's start a new dance.
The pogo is
the
a good
pogo.
One.
Back in the Devo days.
I mean, but you know, it's like, so, you know, we don't want to be the voice of like the anti-moshing contingent. You know what I mean? It's like we don't really care that much. But we, you know, it's one of 100 honest statements that we've made that somebody takes umbrage with because they think we're trying to tell people what to do. It's just, you know, it's. I've always respected people in bands. I mean, R.E.M. was a great example of a band that always spoke some kind of truth about rock and roll, and we feel a certain responsibility to speak that kind of truth. People don't want to hear that truth. That's fine. There's plenty of bands that don't like you. Trust me. They don't really care about you. They're self-serving bands. They only care about what they're doing, and if they want to stare at their shoes and play music, that's cool.
Pavement.
But I would. I'm not going to name names.
Come on.
I don't even care to name names.
Shall we move on?
Yeah.
Your name, please.
My name is Jeremy. I'm from Tacoma. And first, I wanted to thank y'all. Thank you two for coming out and talking to us.
Thanks
and,
for coming too.
Really appreciate you guys doing this. It's kind of cool that you did this for us. And my question for Billy: do you have any words of wisdom for musicians that are just starting out, like say if you go back down the road and you think about it, you know, what things you might have done differently or labels you started out with or, you know, things that you did to start out with that that got you where you are today. Do you have any words of wisdom to share with anybody else to start on that path down that road?
Especially in the Northwest, there's a lot of ears out there.
Yeah. It's actually pretty simple.
It's not. It's really hard.
No. Phyllis, it's philosophically. See, this is why we're in a band together. It's actually philosophically pretty simple.
Pisces, Taurus, Pisces.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. The best thing I could say is the things that we did that were right were we never deviated from what we did. We just played Smashing Pumpkins music, and believe me, there were plenty of people who told us we were way behind the times, way ahead of the times. Copying trends, and if everything you can imagine someone could say that's negative about music was said about us in the first 2 to 4 years, and occasionally it's still said about us. Second of all, we've invested every bit of money that we made in playing shows, and we played a lot of shows that we put on ourselves or booked around town. We put everything back into making demo tapes and learning how to record and working on songs, and we spent every available moment we could working on the band, and that paid dividends because, you know, by the time that people finally started to come and see us, we had progressed to a point where we were capable of making our own records and writing our own songs to the point where Gish was only 2 years after Smashing Pumpkins started, and it was a pretty sophisticated album because we'd made that much progression in 2 years. Beyond that, I mean, it's just you got to totally follow your heart. I mean, people tell us to change the name. People told me to get rid of band members. People told me I shouldn't be singing. I mean, everything you can imagine negative was said, including from parents, friends, everything. And all I did was believe in myself and eventually in the band as an entity, and that's always served us really well.
Billy, you met James. You guys started the band together, James and yourself.
Right.
Where did you meet?
He was actually playing with this kind of death rocker guy. We knew Lenny, and then we started this. Originally, it was like a death rock kind of band. it was me, and James wouldn't, me and Lenny were kind of death rocky, and James was into the Smiths, and James wouldn't follow the death rock plan. And then when we went metal, James still wouldn't follow the metal plan. He still wanted to look like the guy in the Smiths, and it took about 2 years before James would grow his hair long. Now you can't get him to cut it.
Shall we move on?
Let's do it.
Your name?
I'm Jason from Seattle. Hey, Darcy, glad you came. I was wondering how you guys decide which songs to play each night.
On tour.
Next question.
Next question.
Wow. No, okay. it's actually, I mean, on this tour, if you get a chance to come to the shows, we're on the new album, we're pretty much playing almost everything that we could possibly play.
There's a pretty strong core, but it depends on our mood. Sometimes we'll make the set lists and even just change it as we go along, depending on our mood, depending on how the audience is. You know, we try and change it up because there are people who will go to the shows, different shows, and we don't want them to have to see the same thing, and we don't want to do the same thing because we get bored as well. So.
And the evening with Billy Corgan, and very special surprise, Darcy's here tonight with us as well, in a room full of people with questions. And do we have another question?
We got another one. Your name, please.
My name's Tony. Hope you enjoy your visit here. Wanted to ask you, when do you feel most inspired to write lyrics, and is it like, do you get excited, or is it a labor of love?
That would be both.
Squeeze them out sometimes, and
well,
sometimes
you know, it's like, you know,
come from above.
Like, sometimes I think, ah, oh, I've got the best idea, and I write it down. I go back later, and it's so terrible. I think, what the hell am I thinking? You know. And then other times, it's like I totally have to stick a crowbar in my gut, and out comes really good stuff. So, Lord knows how I write these songs. I have no idea. You know?
I heard an interview once with you, Billy, where you were talking about not all the lyrics of your music necessarily may have to do with true life things, but it all comes from different experiences that you've sort of mixed up and made seem a little bit more obscure.
Yeah, well, there's certainly an emotional truth, you know, to them all. I mean, not that I've lived every moment of those, because I don't have time to live. So if I had time to live, I'd write about that, but I don't think you want to hear about, like, I'm in another hotel room, and things are real sad, and
we have no
the
life.
Phone's not ringing, and we have no life. Hey! And then the chorus comes in, you know? I don't think you really want to hear about that, so we just sing about what our lives could be like.
What they used to be like.
Yeah, what they used to be like.
The good old days.
Back when you were working in the sushi bar.
Yeah.
Are you cutting sushi? Cutting fish?
I believe she was throwing it at people.
Yeah. They wouldn't let me actually cut it, you know?
Keep Darcy away from the knives. Yeah, let's do one more.
What's your name?
Katie. Besides the success and the fame and the fortune.
Well.
Other than that.
What's left? Okay. What sort of lasting inner reward has music given you?
Well.
Heavy.
You want me to answer that one, there, Darcy?
I think it's different for every person. You know, it depends on where you're coming from and where you're going. It forces you to grow up really fast. It's pretty much like throw you in sink or swim. You learn a lot really quickly, and you grow a lot really quickly, and it's, you know.
Well, hey.
Another high
Does that work?
Noise from
yeah.
the room here.
Are we going to take a break? Or just Billy, did you want to answer that question as well?
Wait till after the commercial.
No, go ahead, Billy. No. We're all right. Other than that high pitch.
No, I mean, for me, I mean, I've thought about it a lot, and certainly I think the greatest thing is that we've always just been ourselves, you know. Certainly, you know, there was a really weird time for us when after Gish came out, and then, you know, Nirvana became so famous seemingly overnight, and there were all these people questioning why we weren't that kind of band, and why we didn't write 3-minute songs. And I'm really proud that we didn't like suddenly change our course and try and follow, you know, the grunge revolution into the sea, you know. I mean, we stuck to our guns, and I think that's why people respect us, because we haven't jumped on that ship, and now we're surrounded by 8,000 imitators, and you know, it's just a crazy world, you know. But at that time, it would have been really easy to do that. Because certainly there were bands from America that we would go to Europe, and there'd be the words "from Seattle" would be bigger than the actual name of the band. I mean, people were selling where they were from and what label they were on and what movement they were part of more so than they were selling themselves. And people would assume that we were from Seattle, And we would have to say no. And they'd say, oh, you're a grunge band. We'd say, no, we're not. And it's like this went on 1,000 times for years. And I'm really proud that we've been ourselves. And at the end of the day, if we didn't sell another record, at least we'd be happy because we rocked and we certainly had a good time.
We did it our way.
Do you think that the Seattle rumor had anything to do with the Sub Pop single? The Afghan Whigs ran into the same thing.
Oh,
I remember
sure.
people thinking...
Sure. I'm sure that was part of it, not
yeah, I mean, that,
the entirety.
That
of
didn't
part.
Help, but I mean, it was. It's hard to kind of put it all into words, but it was amazing. It was like we'd go to Europe, and everybody was so enamored with this part of the world, and to not be from here was like almost like, well, we're not really interested in you. You know, it was really a weird
people
thing.
People used it to their advantage, probably.
Well, trust me, certain those people know who they are.
It's an evening with Billy Corgan and Darcy from the Smashing Pumpkins. An evening with Billy Corgan and Darcy of the Smashing Pumpkins. We're live at an undisclosed location here in Seattle. A very beautiful location at that. Candles lit.
Your living room is very nice.
Yeah. candles lit all over. We have a fireplace over here. It's nice. Are you guys enjoying the environment? You guys get some free food upstairs, too? Free food?
All right.
It's catered. This is nice.
Before we move on to the next question, I just wanted to personally thank you, Billy and Darcy, for having Cheap Trick play with you live at the big show that you guys broadcast.
No,
I'm
we
a
thank
huge
them.
Cheap Trick fan.
We thank them. Let me tell you, we probably wouldn't be here.
I mean, I can't tell you how cool it was for me to hear three Cheap Trick songs live, knowing that it was going on all over the nation and people... having to air it. And I was like, yes, Cheap Trick on my radio station. So thank you guys. That was great. You guys been, obviously, grew up being big fans.
Yeah, I mean, we grew up in that horrible decade called the 70s. And Cheap Trick was like literally like the nirvana of our youth. So.
Heck yeah.
Should have been anyway.
Right or on. Should have been, yeah.
Other bands in Chicago that you guys are fans of? Red Meat?
Red Meat, absolutely, yeah. Urge Overkill, Baruch Assault.
You name it. Catherine. I have to plug Catherine.
Darcy's husband plays drums.
Oh, you're giving Catherine. It away. The play.
Were you going to use that as a trivia question? End of the show, we're going to give away a couple pairs of tickets to tomorrow night's show, and I think Darcy and Billy are going to come up with the trivia questions. None of which
we
used on the air, mind you.
We have a quiz at the end.
Yeah.
You drill them with a quiz.
Yeah, I'm quiz. Pumpkin Trivia King.
Want to go to our next question?
I guess I won't
yeah.
win.
What's your name?
Hi, my name's Tim Hatch. Hi, Billy. Hi, Darcy.
Hi.
I just had a quick question about if you guys would maybe ever be interested in maybe starting your own indie label, or are you? I mean...
Darcy!
I don't...
Yes. We are Scratchy, and we have some pretty good bands.
James and Darcy have
and
started a label.
My in-laws and some friends from New York, some good music.
Isn't your mom putting out an album?
Yeah. Yeah, she plays the flute.
Next question, your name?
Hi, I'm Amy from Orting, Washington, and I heard that you guys were pretty upset when the video for 1979 got lost. How exactly did that happen?
We would like to ask the same question.
Upset? No.
The story we were told was he who shall remain nameless was given the tapes to take to a dubbing lab, and he put the tapes on top of his car in a box.
You know how you put your gas cap on top of your car when you're putting gas? Never do that.
And drive away. He drove away in the... They found the box, and then they heard there was a ghost, and then the ghost of the man who got the tapes, and they had the cops looking, and they were announcing it on the radio. And
you guys had to go back and reshoot it.
Oh, yes. Yes, we did.
That was the house scene in the video.
It was
right?
worth it, though.
Yeah, I mean...
You got at least a 30 more seconds.
No, about 10 seconds. That 10 seconds you see of the party, that was 4 hours there, 4 hours back, driving there, driving, you know, so... It was worth it, though.
Next question. Your name?
Yeah, this is Peter Swansea from Burien. I was wondering whether you ever think that Jimmy is sort of a discredited member of the band, being a really talented drummer.
What do you mean discredited, though?
Well, I've seen a lot of pictures where he's in the background, and I've, you know...
Drummer syndrome.
Yeah.
They're waiting for him to blow
drummer
up any minute.
If you want to, you know, they get screwed all the
time. I think, put it this way, I mean, Jimmy personally is not that interested in the spotlight. I don't think Jimmy's that interested in being recognized, but anybody who knows drums knows that and knows who Jimmy is. So.
Honest to God, Jimmy Chamberlain is one of the best drummers in the world, quite literally. He really is, and he knows it, so he doesn't need...
You're here.
Not in a bad way. He doesn't need that. He has his own self-confidence, which is really healthy. He doesn't need all that other stuff.
He's pretty cool letting me and James hog all the pictures.
Your name?
My name's Jessica Dillard, and I have two questions. I wondered if you found that your new ticket plan, or how you're selling tickets, have you found that that's more of a fan base now than before?
Absolutely.
And I was wondering who you guys have found to be, like, the most influential people in your music, like, you know, who you looked up to when you were young, and...
Two-part question.
Well, I'll answer the ticket thing. I mean, I'm completely amazed, because we've done other small shows. I'm completely amazed at the amount of fans who are actually at the shows. And the way that we can tell is, you know, when we get about 2 hours into our show, you know, the whole place is still there, still watching the show, and there isn't a group of 150 people at the back at the bar, which is how it used to be when
and
we played small shows.
Over the shows.
And nobody talks over the shows. It's like it's all fans, and it's been really great.
And nobody moshes to Disarm.
No, that still happens. You'd be surprised. But the influences, well...
But they stay there. The show's really long, and they're still there, so they must really care.
You're doing like a two-part kind of show. You take
Don't
an intermission,
give it away.
Right? Oh, sorry.
No, the world knows. Now we're doing a two-part show, and we come out and play about 45 minutes, kind of mellow-esque, and then we come out, take about a 20-minute break, and then we come back out and then beat your head in with the metal.
Your name, please?
Jamie Arthur. And I had a question about, I heard you were writing a song for Courtney Love to perform. Could you elaborate or explain or whatever?
Is it true?
The answer
actually, Billy's written all Courtney songs.
Well, and wait, amazingly, she thinks she's written all of
Courtney.
Mine. That's the other amazing
part. I love Courtney,
part.
And that's not a meme.
I've heard her
say that. That's just a joke.
Yeah. You know, according to her, Disarm was her song, which I don't remember her actually showing me, but that's kind of a funny thing. But yeah, as far as this song, there is a song that I wrote with her in mind.
Yeah,
and,
actually.
She made me so angry that I'm not going to give it to her at this particular moment. So we'll see what happens to the song.
What happened?
You guys are still friends, though.
Yeah, we're still very
I heard
close.
Courtney came out and spanked you at the L.A. show live on stage. Was that true?
No comment.
Are you done?
I'm done. But the great part was is nobody recognized her because, you know, because she's doing this movie and she's lost about 35 pounds. And it's not like she was big before,
and her
but
hair's
she's like
black now.
And she came on stage and nobody knew who she was.
Oh, that's great.
So that's not bad for the most recognizable woman in America. You know?
Yeah. Your name, please.
Ellen. I've noticed that some of your lyrics, but particularly song titles, echo some of the passages in Kurt Vonnegut books. And I was wondering, particularly in Slaughterhouse-Five, I was wondering if Kurt Vonnegut is a particular influence, or is that just coincidence?
You're literally like the fourth person in the past 5 days that has cited an author as an influence or an inspiration for my lyrics, and I've never read any of those authors. So either I'm tied into the universal spirit that is authorship, or it's just sheer coincidence.
I've read it, and I'm projecting it psychically into his brain.
Next question.
Your name, please.
Dana. I've noticed a lot of religious references in your lyrics, and I was wondering if you're personally a religious person, and if so, do you believe in organized religion, or do you believe that it comes from within?
Well, all those references to Jesus are really this guy, no, Jesus. So don't mistake that. And I don't know. The religious question is always a really weird one to me, because I feel really uncomfortable talking about it in public.
It's not one of those things you're supposed to talk about in mixed company.
I just, you know, if there is a heaven, I see me getting there and being yelled at. That's all I'll tell you. I see, like, you know, like the book where they open it up and it's like, you said this naughty word, 9 million times, you know? And you're like, no. And you're like, yes, yes, you did, you know?
Your name, please.
Sean Thayer from Bellevue. And I was wondering, after Space Boy, there's like a little excerpt from a, I think it was an interview you guys did a while back. What exactly is that?
Space Boy from Simon
Street. Are you talking about the masturbatory comment?
Yes.
It's just this weird thing I found. It's just this woman talking about her husband masturbating himself. I thought it was funny. It's really that simple. I mean, you know, everyone always like makes us out to be such serious people, you know. I thought it was a little funny in joke.
Your name? Nick Brown. I was wondering why you guys picked Flood to produce Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness instead of Butch Big.
Well, Flood producing Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness has a better ring to it than Butch Vig producing Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness. No, but seriously, Flood, because of the bands that he'd work with, like U2 and Depeche Mode, we felt could better do this crazy album. It's really kind of that simple.
Now, when I had heard that Flood was working on the record, I was thinking, wow, there's going to be a big sound difference on this record, and I think people were treated to that. In fact, I remember seeing a quote, and I'm not sure if it actually came out of your mouth or not, Billy, about what was being created here was comparable to The Wall of the 90s.
Well, that was me shooting my mouth off before we actually recorded the album, so...
But in terms of sound, I mean, 1979 is such a far cry from anything you guys had done in the past. Was working with Flood an intentional thing because you knew you were going to go in that direction?
He might be it was kind of a guess. I don't, you know, 1979 was probably, was the last song that I wrote for the album. So
doesn't it always work like that?
It's kind of weird that way, yeah, you know, and...
Any indication of the direction the Pumpkins might be going in?
You mean droning synth pop? Oh, sure.
Your name? My name is Angela Rainey, and I had a question as far as... I know a lot of your influences are like Cheap Trick and a lot of male people. I was wondering, is there a lot of female influences that you've listened to as well?
That would be my mother. I believe that's the superseding influence of all.
How about you, Darcy?
Oh, geez.
Any women in rock?
Maybe Olivia Newton-John.
Yeah. I mean, you got to remember the decade we grew up in. There were not a lot of strong women at that time were portrayed mostly as sex objects in music, and there weren't a lot of really... I mean, Joan Jett was one of the few women who stood for something besides... just pure, I mean, she looked good, but she rocked, too. There wasn't a lot of that.
Deborah Harry, like Fleetwood Mac, you know.
But even Deborah Harry was sold more as a sex object when you really look back at it.
Right. Heart, maybe?
Heart.
You guys grew up with that?
Yeah.
Next question.
You know, Heart, you know, what's so funny, though, is like because Heart was such an accepted rock band, I almost never really even thought about them in terms of male or female.
And that's the way it should
be. That's the way it should have been. And that's why I wouldn't even think to mention Heart, because they were, at that time, such an accepted rock band.
Do you think that that's the way things are becoming more and more?
Absolutely. I mean, Darcy used to get asked, what's it like to be a girl in the band? Like, literally every interview 4 years ago. I mean, it was so redundant and so offensive. And either they finally figured out not to ask her that question, or it's just ceased to be an issue.
Let's go to our next question here.
Hi, I'm Josh from Seattle, and I was wondering how you guys feel about bootlegs and people taping your shows and that kind of stuff. I mean, is it like a big problem, or is it something you guys just turn away from?
We don't mind if they tape the good ones, you know.
In general, we pretty much think that the only people who are going to buy those are people who are so into the band that they already have everything else already. We got really bummed when they bootlegged the shows that we did before the album came out. That was kind of a bummer. But
which I kind of wanted to ask you guys about, too.
The Lost Darcy tapes?
Yeah, that was a drag.
What happened there?
Just can't trust anybody.
Somebody you were close to?
Yeah, somebody basically living in her house was stealing tapes. Ooh. Demo tapes and...
Uh-huh. And booting them?
Band rehearsals and things.
And equipment, et cetera, et cetera.
Ouch. Ouch. You guys had done those live broadcasts. A lot of people, a lot of excitement. What was it, the first song in, second song in?
Yeah, that would be, I believe that was the second song in, yeah.
And the great thing about it is I heard somebody screaming, you know, off mic because it wasn't being blasted right out in the theater, but I heard somebody bashing around something and just yelling at the top of their lungs. I'm assuming that was you, Billy.
No.
No, we were laughing.
We thought it was funny.
That's great.
We were making jokes.
It was like, if you could imagine, you know, it's like, you know, we hadn't really played for about 6 or 7 months. New album's coming out. We're really excited. Hometown show, second song, Power Goes, and we're standing there going, yep, this would be Pumpkin Luck, yep. National radio, you know, here we are, standing here, looking at our shoes. So.
Telling jokes.
No, we thought it was really funny. Now, the people that were yelling were the people that were afraid they were going to lose their jobs.
Our tour manager.
We go to another question here.
Hi, my name is Robert Osgood. I'm from Renton, and I was wondering what kind of a part are synthesizers and keyboards going to play in your next album?
We're hoping to get to the point where we actually don't play anymore, and we just send the robots out on the road.
Next question.
Hi, I'm Jamie, and I was just wondering what sort of films you guys like. Darcy, I know you like Blue Velvet, and I really like your shirt. Besides from that,
I mean the one she wore 400 times.
How could you guess?
Oh, what kind of films? You like them crazy, weird films, don't you?
I like films for kids. I like little kids.
We're real big Disney fans. We watch a lot of Disney on tour.
I'm dying to see that movie.
Oh, it's great.
One of my favorite movies is like The Adventures of Baron Munchausen and, you know, stuff like that.
I'm Shivali from Ording, and how did you write all 28 songs on Melancholy in 6 months?
I wrote 50 songs in about a year and a half. Basically, I didn't do anything else, and Darcy can attest to that. You know, she was like, why don't you get a life? Because all I did was stay in and work. That's really all I did.
28 songs must have been pared down from a higher number.
That's what I'm saying. I wrote 50, and James wrote probably another 12 to 15. We had a lot of, I mean, there's about 20 to 25 B-sides coming out yet that weren't good enough to be on the album songs, you know.
Right on.
I'm that Taylor was a Brown joke, by the way. And I was wondering why you and James don't sing that much, or don't sing more.
I'm sorry, what's the question?
I was wondering why you and James don't sing more.
Yeah, why don't you sing more?
We could go to the next question if you want.
Next question.
I guess we're skipping that one.
And I'm afraid that we're also going to have to skip that final question, as unfortunately we've run out of time ourselves here on Late Night Interview. Our sincerest thanks once again to Billy and Darcy of the brilliant Smashing Pumpkins. They really are a top band, super stuff. And don't forget to join us next week. Join me, your host, Max Asanovich. Same place, same time. Good night.